You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode and a new week here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Gallery Furniture, where their incredible Memorial Day Super Sale has now been extended. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of the specials. As we chat this Monday evening, Memorial Day, first off, thanks for spending a portion of your holiday, or if you're listening on Tuesday, the start of your work week with us here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I appreciate it. The NBA Finals, since we last spoke over the weekend, have been set. The Raptors beat the Bucks in Game 6, I think further cementing why, regardless of whether he wins it or not, James Harden definitely the best player in the game this year and the deserving MVP over Giannis. As far as the NBA Finals to come between Toronto and Golden State, which begins on Thursday, it's obvious from a number of storylines, I think, that Toronto winning is in the best interest of the Rockets. Certainly, Kevin Durant's free agency, I'm on the record as saying that the best increase to Houston's championship odds, reasonable increase, based in the scenarios this summer, is if Kevin Durant leaves Golden State. Well, if Golden State loses the series, it's easier for him to walk away. A secondary storyline to watch, Kawhi Leonard's free agency. If the Raptors win the finals, that makes it harder for him to walk away from Toronto and go where a lot of folks have suspected, to one of the LA teams in the Western Conference. So from the standpoint of free agents to be, KD and Kawhi, I think Toronto winning is definitely in Houston's best interest. And also, I think if someone can actually beat the Warriors, I think it makes the league much more compelling. They've won the West 5 straight years. 3 of them they won NBA titles. The 1 year they lost, it took LeBron at the peak of his powers in 2016, along with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. I think if anyone proves that it's possible to beat the Warriors 4 times out of 7, it just makes the NBA a much more compelling product beyond just the free agency implications as we head towards 2020. So for a lot of reasons, I think Toronto winning that series would be in Houston's best interest and really the entire NBA's best interest. But as for whether it happens, we'll have to wait and see, because saying you can beat the Warriors is one thing. The Rockets are obviously evidence of a team that's been close, but actually doing it 4 times, that's another matter altogether. And we'll just have to see how the series moves along once it starts on Thursday night. So for today, I want to discuss things from a Rockets perspective that are much more within their control, which are potential deals by GM Daryl Morey this offseason. Because they're capped out, they're in luxury tax territory, so any moves the Rockets make to upgrade this roster, they're probably going to come from the trade market. In fact, they almost have to, because not only are they capped out, they also don't have any draft picks, no first rounder, no second rounder, and they only have about $560,000 left in terms of their cash, so it's going to be very hard for them to buy a draft pick this year. They've done it in the past because they've had cash available. This year, they've spent most of it in other trades, so it's going to be difficult for the Rockets to even get into the second round this year, even if they wanted to, because they're just not allowed to send that cash in trades. In fact, the only way they could get into the draft would be very late in the 50s, if they could, with how limited their funds are. And more reasonably, you'd be looking at probably getting a preferred undrafted free agent the same way they did with Gary Clark a season ago. And even if you hit on one of those guys, it's probably not in year one. So as far as upgrading Houston's championship chances in the near term, it's always about the trade market as far as this iteration of the Rockets with the salaries that they have already committed. So in this show on Monday evening, we're going to look at both realistic moves that they could conceivably make and also some not so realistic ones. And I'm actually going to start with the not realistic, because it's the biggest headliner, the Chris Paul contract. It's discussed a lot on social media. There's a lot of clickbait, because certainly at $38 million next season, that's what Chris Paul is owed. I don't think anyone believes that his production is worth that. With that said, I don't see a reasonable scenario where it behooves the Rockets to trade him, and that seems to be confounding to a lot of people who don't know the intricacies of the Rockets and the salary cap, their situation. But I've seen a few storylines already about hypothetical Chris Paul trades, and I've alluded over the past week or two to why that I don't think they make much sense for the Rockets. Specifically, it's that the Rockets would still be over the cap in a lot of these scenarios, and even if in the perfect world where they'd get under it, it still wouldn't be by anywhere near the value of the contract. So for today, I want to go into that a bit more and explain why none of the Chris Paul scenarios that I have seen really make any sense. And I know that's not everything going on with the Rockets these days. There's a coaching staff that's in flux. They let four more go on Friday afternoon on top of Jeff Bezdelic. So there's four coaching slots and the video coordinator that should be filled. But if you want to talk about the coaches, check back to our last two episodes. We discussed that plenty. Since there hasn't been any news, it's been a holiday weekend, I'm going to spin things forward to what may happen in June and July and what some of those possibilities are for the Rockets on the trade market. And let's start with Chris Paul, because that's the biggest name. I know some folks are not happy because his production does not match his contract. But the reason that I want to push back on that, it's important to understand that what matters is not whether Chris Paul's production matches his salary. It's about what the Rockets could do if Chris Paul's money was not on the books. That's the only thing that matters, is that in any of these trades, do you have a better shot to win an NBA title next year with James Harden right in the middle of his prime, entering his age 30 season? And as I see it, there's two ways that Chris Paul could hypothetically be dealt. There's the idealistic route, and there's the what I consider realistic route. I'll start with the idealistic one, and I really don't see this happening. That's why I call it idealistic. But in a perfect world, the best case result for the Rockets in terms of Chris Paul being overpaid, owed about $125 million combined over the next 3 years, would be that a team that had enough salary cap room to absorb his contract in its entirety, making $38 million next year, would simply take him into cap space as if he were a free agent and all of a sudden absolve the Rockets from that obligation. That's the absolute best case scenario from a cap perspective. However, I don't really see it as particularly likely, because if there is a team, and there aren't very many, with $35 to $40 million in cap space just sitting around, then why would they not want to go after Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, younger and better free agent options for that money? And even if they don't get players of that caliber, even if those guys say no, then why would they not want to go younger than a 34-year-old Chris Paul? I don't see why someone would take the contract off the Rockets' hands altogether, just because it doesn't really make sense. Either they would be positioned to get a top-tier free agent, or for that matter, even if they didn't, then they'd still either want to roll over the cap room to future off-seasons or get someone younger. Most teams that have cap space, unless they get a KD or Kawhi, they're not going to contend, and if you're not a contender, then a 34-year-old Chris Paul doesn't make sense. So I don't really see offloading the contract altogether as very realistic. But even if it was, I still don't see it as all that beneficial to the Rockets to do a move. Because here's the thing. The NBA's projected salary cap is $109 million. Right now, the Rockets are at $115 million, $6 million over the salary cap, just between the five starters. Harden, CP3, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella. It's expensive to have a good team unless somehow you have the benefit of a guy in his rookie deal the first 3 or 4 years, and then at that point, that's the only real market inefficiency in terms of guys paid well below their production. So they're over the salary cap just between the five starters. Then you've got Nene, you've got Hartenstein and Clark on relatively inexpensive but still more than $1 million deals off the bench. Right now, in total, the Rockets, just between eight players, have $125 million on the books committed for next offseason or for next regular season. Then you have to add in empty roster spot charges, because there are things called cap holds. You can't just say shave your roster down to four players and then whatever the leftover salary cap room is, use that to sign someone else. No, the NBA assumes that of course you're going to have to fill out the roster that's required, and even though it would be the rookie minimum, the lowest, it's not zero. There are holds that happen for each leftover roster spot. So you add those to the $125 million that's committed to the eight players under contract, and you're approaching $130 million roughly, about $20 million over the salary cap. So even if you could deal Chris Paul for nothing, just snap your fingers and make him go away, you wouldn't have $38 million to play with. You would have about $18 million. But that's before you consider that going under the salary cap, it would also cost you your mid-level exception. You only get that if you are above the cap, and the mid-level exception is worth about $5.7 million, close to $6 million a year. So you'd have to say goodbye to that. So in terms of the net benefit, you'd take down the $18 million, put it closer to 12. You'd also have to renounce your rights to guys like Iman Shumpert, Gerald Green, your own free agents that you have bird or early bird rights to. So at the end of the day, even if you could move Chris Paul for nothing, which I highly doubt, you are looking at a net benefit of maybe somewhere $10 to $15 million, 15 in the rosiest possible scenario, in terms of cap room. Chris Paul is overpaid at $35 to $38 million. I agree. But if you are comparing Chris Paul to whatever you could get on the market with $10 to $15 million worth of flexibility, I'm sorry, I think I would prefer Chris Paul. That is not that much money on the current NBA market. And while Chris Paul is overpaid, he is still a useful player. So even in the rosiest scenario, I don't see that it makes sense to all of a sudden try and ditch him, because the salary cap room that you would get just is not that meaningful in the grand scheme, because Chris Paul, while overpaid, he is still a good player. Now, the more realistic scenarios to hypothetically dealing Chris Paul this offseason would be acquiring a less bad contract. And what I mean by that is someone that's similarly overpaid, you would make the math work, and teams wouldn't have that much of a financial obligation. It wouldn't be like you're just taking Chris Paul into cap space, which, as I've explained, I don't think that really makes sense. So perhaps, like, say, Phoenix with Tyler Johnson. That's been speculated. The Suns is a potential Chris Paul destination, a hypothetical floated by ESPN Zach Lowe. Let's say the Suns make a deal involving Tyler Johnson and TJ Warren. You could get close to $35 million between those two players, and the Rockets getting bad contracts, but just slightly less bad in terms of the perceived value around the league than Chris Paul. Well, that's fine, but at the end of the day, what you're doing is that you are taking a trade-off. You are making yourself worse in 2020 if you were to do a deal like that at the benefit of having salary cap room in 2021. That's basically what you'd be doing. If you trade Chris Paul, and this is the realistic route, for players who aren't as good with contracts that, you know, are similar in terms of value but maybe expire a year earlier. And the logic to that is that, well, the Rockets, they wouldn't owe Chris Paul $45 billion when he's in his age 36 season or whatever it may be. And if you don't understand the Rockets' specific situation, then you might see some merits to that. However, what the Rockets are thinking, they have James Harden in the last 2 to 3 years of his true prime. He's becoming 30 later this year. He's not going to be at this level forever. Now, he'll still be a good player. I think his game will age more friendly than a lot of other stars based on how cerebral he is. But there is going to be a point, it happens with all players, even really good ones, around 32, 33, that he starts to decline. It does not make sense for the Rockets to take a downgrade to their championship chances in 2020, which, if you know, you move Chris Paul and you give his minutes to someone like Tyler Johnson, it definitely makes you a worse basketball team. It does not make sense to decrease your odds in 2020 because maybe you have more flexibility in 2021 or 2022. Guess what? At that point, James Harden's going to be 32, 33. He's likely going to be starting his decline, and your championship window is less regardless. For Houston, and Daryl Morey has been very transparent about this, everything is about the here and now, what their opportunities are in 2019 and 2020, this upcoming season. So the idealistic route, again, I don't think even if you were to ditch him, the net savings of about $10, $12 billion to spend on the market, I don't think it's that much. But even in the more practical route, which would be about not so much saving money now, but getting off a year or two at the end of that contract. Okay, but if it makes you a worse basketball team, why would the Rockets reduce their championship odds a year from now, one of the last true years of James Harden's prime, because they might have a little bit more flexibility a couple of years down the road? For a lot of teams, that might make sense because they're not all about winning now. For the Rockets, it's about winning now. So in both of those scenarios, the common theme, you have to think of Chris Paul's value as a basketball player. Forget the contract. Just think about what Chris Paul means to your chances of winning. There have definitely been times that I've been critical of him. He didn't match the standard he set in the 2018 playoffs, and that probably has to do with the aging curve. But by and large, he is still a very good basketball player, and he really helps your chances of winning and being a contender. And for the Rockets, because of that, it just does not make sense to move him. If you could conceivably get an upgrade for the same money, sure, but why in the world would any other team do that? You'd either be looking at a salary dump or more likely getting some lesser players with contracts that are ending earlier. The trade-off being you're getting less value now, but you're going to get more flexibility in a year or two. Why does that make sense for a Rocket squad built around what's going to be a 30-year-old James Harden? So you never say never, but I can't see a scenario in which it makes sense for the Houston Rockets to deal Chris Paul and where it also matches for the other team. So that's why, to me, I don't think that's even worth clicking on. I think a lot of the discussions is clickbait. You know, there have been these rumors of, are Chris Paul and James Harden seeing eye to eye? I think a lot of that is just, you know, you go through a series intense like the Rockets and the Warriors, then sure, two stars, they're always going to wonder if there's something else that they could have done. Perhaps if they do X differently, then they get a very different result. You can always wonder, and these guys are competitors in the heat of battle, things are going to happen. I don't see any reason to believe that there's underlying tension or something to worry about. But quite frankly, no matter what, I just don't see from an asset standpoint and where the Rockets are in their contending cycle any scenario that it makes sense to deal him. I get that, you know, you see the Rockets at this weird spot as a franchise, you see these reports of discontent, and a lot of clickbait type sites are going to put two and two together and put in a buzzy headline about hypothetical deals. When you actually look at the salary cap and what it means, I just don't see a scenario I can come up with where it makes sense for both teams. So for me at this point, unless there's some concrete evidence out there and I've not seen anything of it, this is why I'm closing the book on hypothetical Chris Paul trades. I've hinted at it before. This is my podcast to get it off my chest, where I just want to explain why I don't see any pathway at all where this makes sense. And with that, I think we can move on to more realistic trade discussions, which we'll do in the second and third segments of our usual three-part show. For now, I want to tell you about our friends over at Gallery Furniture and their incredible Memorial Day Super Sale, which has now been extended. Visit any convenient Houston area Gallery Furniture location today at 6006 North Freeway, 7227 West Grand Parkway South, or 2411 Post Oak Boulevard to shop the largest ever inventory of solid wood Amish-made furniture in Gallery Furniture history. Plus, you can enjoy amazing deals on name-brand mattresses, including Sealy, stunning bedroom styles starting at $599, beautifully upholstered sofas priced as low as $399, entire dining sets from as low as $599, and so much more. Gallery Furniture is receiving new shipments of quality furniture after Memorial Day weekend, and you can now enjoy the Memorial Day savings. As great as they are, well, they're extending, and you can apply them to brand new items as well. Gallery Furniture is proud to now serve a wider range of Houstonians with low prices on quality furniture for every room in your cherished home. Shop Gallery Furniture's extended Memorial Day Super Sale savings today and enjoy your new quality furniture purchases in your home within 3 to 4 hours when you choose same-day delivery. You can also check them out at galleryfurniture.com. All right, jumping back into Monday evening's program here at Locked On Rockets, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. I'm calling this our off-season trade primer episode, in which we look at possibilities, both not-so-realistic, the Chris Paul hypothetical, which I explained in segment one, why I don't really see him as a trade candidate at all for the Rockets this offseason. And now, in segments two and three, I'll look at some considerations, both for the next couple of months and heading into the start of the 2019 season, that I do think could become priorities for the Rockets and what I think Daryl Morey is actively considering when it comes to personnel. That's our focus today. I know the Rockets have a lot of coaching turmoil. We've talked about that a lot on recent episodes, and you can check out our Locked On Rockets archives if you want that. Today, it's about the personnel. What I think is most noteworthy in terms of realistic trades, it comes down to a number of trade exceptions the Rockets have at their disposal from moves throughout the past year. And the biggest ones, they have two trade exceptions worth more than $3 million from the trades of Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris at the trade deadline. They also have several, six or seven more, that are smaller than that. But it's the two salaries, or the two trade exceptions for potential salaries of $3 to $3.5 million roughly, that are really intriguing to me. And the reason it's a big deal, I talked in segment one about the Rockets' salary structure, which they're over the salary cap by $15 million in terms of their commitments, even though they only have eight players under contract, the five starters plus Nene, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Gary Clark off the bench. Well, what's difficult about that is that you don't have very much in the way of filler salaries. And I've discussed that a lot during the season before the trade deadline. Some of our longtime listeners may remember. Let's throw out a hypothetical. This is not a trade I'm endorsing. I'm just going to use an example of a situation where you may need filler. The Cleveland Cavaliers, given their rebuilding state after losing LeBron a year ago, how much sense does a 31-year-old Kevin Love make for them? Say, hypothetically, the Rockets decided that Kevin Love at the five would be an upgrade to their chances relative to Clint Capela. The problem with that scenario, and a lot of these upgrades, is that Clint Capella makes $17 million and Kevin Love is going to make $29 million. So you need salary to bridge the gap to get close enough to where a trade is allowable under the NBA's collective bargaining agreement. Well, right now, the Rockets just don't have those fillers. They've gotten an A, assuming he doesn't retire. That's about $4 million. And beyond that, you have a couple of minimum salaries in terms of, or near that, Isaiah Hartenstein, Gary Clark. But number one, it's hard to really, even if you sign a bunch of guys to the minimum, it's hard to really make those trades work because then the other team has to have enough roster spots to take on those minimum salaries. So that's why it's hard to really aggregate like five, six guys together to make the math work. Generally, you need more salaries in that $3, $4 million range. Nene is one of them. It'd be really nice if you had two or three to make the math work on some of these upgrades. Because right now, the Rockets could not get Kevin Love without giving up two of their core pieces. And at that point, it's just not worth it for the Rockets. Yeah, you can make the math work if you gave up two of Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker. But at that point, I don't know why the Rockets would do it. That would make them a worse basketball team. And that's just one example. I'm not saying that I've heard that's what the Rockets are doing. That's just one hypothetical I've seen browsing social media and message boards that I've seen discussed. But a lot of guys, it's the same scenario. Some of these quality players that you see as upgrades, they tend to make a lot of money. And the Rockets right now don't have a way to line up those salaries after trading Brandon Knight during the season. So, of course, there are ways long-term that they can get back filler salaries, other trades. They can re-sign Iman Shumpert, Gerald Green, guys they have bird rights on. I'll talk about that a little bit in segment three. But the biggest way they can do it in the interim is by using one of those trade exceptions. And the trade exceptions are not as good as they might appear. Let's be clear about one thing. The Rockets' largest trade exception, $3.6 million, I believe it's from the Marquise Chris trade. Well, you can't tack on the $3.6 million to other players. You can't use it as part of an aggregation deal. You can't, you know, add the $3.6 million exception to Clint Capella and Nene and then, for example, be in range of Kevin Love. That's not how it works. You have to use the exception individually. However, there are some scenarios where teams that are trying to clear cap room for runs in free agency in early July, where they might be willing to trade a player in that range. Now, it's not as simple as it sounds in that if the Rockets trade for someone using a trade exception and bring them in, there is a 60-day waiting period before you can trade that player in aggregate. So let's say you hypothetically deal that exception for someone making $3.5 billion. Well, you can't then turn around and package that with Clint Capella or anybody else for a hypothetical upgrade. It doesn't work that way. But 60 days later, you can. So that's why I think in June, you could see Daryl Morey being very proactive trying to find one of those players, because then by August, still the same offseason, you could hypothetically make a deal. And we have seen trades that are kind of delayed in terms of, even though, you know, you look at August, September, and you say that's late in the offseason. Well, we've seen trades happen in which teams agree and then they just don't finalize until certain obligations run their course. For example, that's how Kevin Love got to Cleveland in the first place. They traded Andrew Wiggins, the Cavs did, who they had signed in early July, and then there's a 30-day waiting period for rookies who have signed contracts to be dealt. Well, everyone knew that there was an agreement in late July. They just had to wait until mid-August to actually consummate the deal officially once Wiggins was trade eligible. So even though it's August or September, yeah, you could conceivably use one of those players that you acquire for a trade exception later in the offseason. The difficulty, and you know, the Rockets could conceivably make a trade now. As soon as your season ends, you are eligible to make a deal. They don't even have to wait until the NBA Finals is over. The reason that I think that there hasn't been a deal, it's not that the Rockets don't want one. Yeah, they see the need, and you know, there are teams that are trying to clear cap space. However, for the teams that are trying to clear cap space, it doesn't matter if they do a deal now or if they do it in late June. As long as they have cap space by July 1st, that's all that matters. So generally, most of these teams wait until the draft because they'd rather not just give a player away. They'd rather try and see if they could make a deal on draft night and maybe get a draft pick that, you know, a stash type player that doesn't impact their cap, but it's at least some return. So as far as the Rockets are concerned, I think they'd love to make a deal to get a salary filler at any point. The sooner the better, because then you can start that 60-day clock. It's just you might not be able to do it at this point because the other teams that are selling, they'll probably want to wait until closer to the draft. There's no incentive for them to do it as long as they get it done by July 1st, and they'd like to see if they can get a little bit of value. So I think Daryl Morey is making calls, but the timetable is not all within his control. However, I do think that's something the Rockets are looking at because, right now, yeah, it's a problem. They don't have salary fillers beyond their starters who, at this point, I just don't see many deals where you would trade two starters and the Rockets come out as better on the basketball side. It's just hard to make it work. So you keep getting in this crunch, and in time, the Rockets can, of course, accrue more tradable salaries, guys who take up a spot in trades, a decent amount, and I'm sure they can replenish their pipeline. But once they dealt Brandon Knight for the expiring contract of Iman Shumpert, and of course Shumpert can't be dealt because he's expiring, well, at this point, the Rockets, their stockpile is empty. So these trade exceptions are a chance for them to replenish their war chest. So that's kind of what I expect at some point in June. I would love it to be earlier, but by suspicion, it might have to be until closer to the draft because teams want to see what their other possibilities are. But to me, that's what the Rockets are going to be looking at. And in a perfect world, you could find someone who not only is potential salary filler down the road, maybe they're also a boost to your rotation, a quality, serviceable player in the interim. Maybe you get lucky and it's the best of both worlds, someone who also helps you on the basketball court instead of just being trade salary filler. But at a bare minimum, I think the Rockets, they know they need to replenish their chest. They have all these trade exceptions. A lot of them are small, but the two that are in the $3 to $3.5 million range, that's pretty significant. And to me, that's item number one on Daryl Morey's offseason to-do list, finding more filler salaries. Because if they can't make a big deal happen now, there are some ways down the road to better position themselves. And step one is starting to replenish your war chest of salaries that you can move to make the math work on a lot of these deals in the months and years to come. Now, there are other steps that they can take internally that would also benefit that. I'll get to that momentarily in the third and final segment. But for now, I want to remind you guys that to get this show each and every day, you can and should subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, third and final segment today, Monday evening here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose. This is our off-season trade primer episode, looking at the personnel issues for the Rockets, things they can do this off-season, either trades on the immediate horizon or to position themselves down the line for the types of upgrades that perhaps would take them to the NBA Finals, which are being played later this week. And of course, the Rockets, not a part of them because they lost in the second round to the Warriors 4-2. In the first couple of segments, we looked at more immediate items. First, I talked about how Chris Paul deals. To me, I don't really see any of them making sense. I think Chris Paul is part of the Rockets for the foreseeable future. In the second segment, I looked at a couple of trade exceptions the Rockets have, which could be used to get the Rockets the salary filler they might need to get some bigger deals, either later this offseason or perhaps during the 2019-2020 regular season. When it comes to deals during the season, that's also an important part of the calculus that I think Rockets fans might be overlooking with regards to their own free agents. Now, let's do a refresher. The three sexiest names, I feel like, on the Rockets' internal free agent list, Austin Rivers, Daniel House, Kenneth Faried, they don't have bird rights on any of these guys because they're all on one-year deals. So if you want to retain them, unless one of them takes like the non-bird tender, or in the case of Daniel House, he'll be restricted up to what the Rockets can match, which is the mid-level exception. But anyway, that gets back into the main theme. Unless they're willing to take the minimum or non-bird, which is a really, really small amount, then they come out of your mid-level exception pile. So one way or another, you're going to get an MLE-level player out of it. It's just, is it Rivers? Is it House? Is it someone else on the market altogether? We'll have to wait and see, but you're probably just going to get one player at that level. Personally, I would love it to be Austin Rivers. But the point is, that's kind of out of your hands. You've got one MLE spot, and you don't really have bird rights. So it's just a matter of, you've got this MLE for about $5.7 million, and you want to use it. Obviously, it's the one tool you have at your disposal to make yourself a better basketball team, the one confirmed tool that's within your control. So you want to use it however you can and just get the best basketball player. So the reason I hit home that theme, those decisions are strictly about basketball. That's about what is the best use of this money to get us a rotation player for the 2020 playoffs that is going to give you the best chance to beat the Warriors and everyone else. It's just about the basketball and what the better fit is. Where it gets interesting is two free agents that the Rockets do have bird rights to and don't have to tap into the mid-level exception money to retain. Those are Iman Shumpert and Gerald Green. And at first glance, a lot of Rockets fans are going to say, why do we want these two players? Iman Shumpert, he was a good defender, but he was fairly underwhelming, I would say, after being a acquired at the trade deadline. His defense was fine. He just didn't really shoot well enough to stay on the floor. Very inconsistent as an offensive player. Now, there is some trust with Mike D'Antoni, assuming D'Antoni sticks around. And perhaps with time, the Rockets can work with his form and get him back to the guy who was shooting nearly 37% on threes during the first two-thirds of the season that he played with the Sacramento Kings. So with Shumpert, they'll have his bird rights. And if you could get him on a deal somewhere, what, $5, $6 million a year maybe, that I think it's reasonable insurance, not necessarily saying he's ticketed to the rotation, but he could help you. And with Gerald Green, it's even murkier because Gerald's older. He's now, what, I believe he's 33 years old. So as opposed to Shumpert, who's still on the right side of 30, let me look up these ages real quick. Gerald is 33 years old, and Iman Shumpert is 28, will turn 29 later this month. So Shumpert, at first glance, is a bigger priority, I think, just because of his age and because he's viable defensively. Game three against the Warriors, I don't know if you win that game without him, and if you don't, then who knows? Maybe you get swept and we're having an entirely different conversation. Gerald, he's a little bit older, so I think that further diminishes his value, and generally he's a shooter only. He doesn't provide you much defensive value. However, beyond just what they can give you on the basketball court, what I think Rockets fans need to think about is the value of retaining one or both of those guys for potential filler purposes. Now, you would not be able to trade either player until December 15th. Anyone you sign in the offseason, you've got to wait until that mid-December date. That's the first date that players who sign in the preceding offseason can be dealt. So in terms of trade possibilities, the Shumpert and Green contracts, even if you re-sign one or both, they would not fit into your calculus this offseason. That's a longer-term play, and that's why I'm talking about them in the third segment. But I do think when the Rockets go about their offseason, when fans evaluate, that's something that I think is going to be undervalued by casual fans that perhaps you should keep in mind. Because for the Rockets, these are the players, Shumpert and Green, that they are not going to have to tap into their mid-level exception to retain. It's not like because they're spending money on Shumpert or Green that all of a sudden they wouldn't have money to spend on someone else. That's not how it works. There's the potential impact if one or either of those guys can help you on the basketball floor. But beyond that, there's also salary filler. Now, that doesn't mean that you should sign one or both of those guys no matter what, because let's say there's a bidding war for Iman Shumpert, who's still on the right side of 30. Well, if you overpay the guy, then even if he is salary filler, it's not really good salary filler because he's going to be seen as a negative asset. So the deal has to make sense. You don't just pay those guys, you know, a large salary just to keep them, because then if they're seen as a net negative, their contracts around the league, then it defeats the entire purpose of it. For it to make sense, you need to re-sign them to reasonable deals to where they could go to another team and make the math work, but without them being seen as negatives in terms of their impact, in terms of their production for their talent. So that's why you can't just re-sign those guys, give them blank checks and say, no matter what, hey, let's keep them because we can use them to fill salary. No, it doesn't work that way. It needs to be a team-friendly deal. However, this is why, even if you're skeptical that one or both of those guys would actually be in the Rockets' rotation next year, especially in the playoffs, it's fair to have doubts. But even if you aren't sold, that's why, to me, there is a case. I would say Gerald, maybe $3, $4 million a year. Shumpert, maybe about $6 million. But to me, that's why if you get a team-friendly deal around those figures, which I don't think would be all that overpaid, then I would do it, even though I'm not all that sold on them as far as will one or either of those guys be the guy that's in your playoff rotation next spring. I don't know about that, but even if they aren't, because they can bridge the gap in trades, if you can get them on a friendly salary figure, that's why you think about re-signing them this summer. And then beyond just any impact they give you on the court, then once December 15th gets here, then you've got those guys in your back pocket to make the math work on any larger deals and upgrades elsewhere. So that's just a little thing to keep in mind. But as we get closer to free agency, with those two, it's not just about the basketball and how you see them in regards to worth the money or where they fit in the rotation. It's also about bridging this gap with regards to filler. And I think the preferred option, if the Rockets could cash in their exceptions, one or more of those on players in June, then that's all the better because those are guys that you could deal later this offseason. Just have to run out the 60-day clock and you can use them in aggregate with any other combination of players and future assets, whatever it may be. With guys you sign this offseason, like if you sign Shumpert and Green, then you can't deal them until December 15th. But as a backup plan, keep in mind with those two, it's not just about the basketball. There's also a reason to keep them around because of their contracts and because of refilling that salary filler role for potential trades, as we were discussing earlier in the program. So that will about do it for our Monday night / Tuesday morning show here at Locked On Rockets. And if you want more content before our next episode later this week, there are, of course, many ways to get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook account, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior episodes, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. Or you can even inquire about how to become a potential advertiser and sponsor of our rapidly growing program, just as our friends at Gallery Furniture were today. Remember, the incredible Memorial Day Super Sale over at Gallery Furniture has now been officially extended. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of the specials. And beyond listening and supporting our sponsors, please remember that you can also help the show by subscribing on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Leave 5-star reviews if you can, too. And when you get in your car, you can even listen to our episodes that way as well, simply by telling your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. And that's all you need to say, play podcast Locked On Rockets, to get the episodes with your smart device. Once again, thanks to all of you for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.